Never in the field of human conflict was so much owed by so many to so few. I hope, indeed I pray, that we shall not be found unworthy of our victory if after toil and tribulation it is granted to us. For the rest, we have to gain the victory. That is our task.
Let us therefore brace ourselves to our duty, and so bear ourselves that if the British Empire and its commonwealths last for 1,000 years, men will still say, this was their finest hour.
We shall not fail or falter. We shall not weaken or tire. Neither the sudden shock of battle nor the long-drawn trials of vigilance and exertion will wear us down. Give us the tools, and we will finish the job.
We shall go on to the end. We shall fight with growing confidence and growing strength. We shall defend our island, whatever the cost may be. We shall fight in the fields and in the streets. We shall fight in the hills. We shall never surrender.
World War II in the Pacific, 4 years of bloody hell, came to an end here. September 2nd, 1945, a solemn ceremony on the deck of the USS Missouri in Tokyo Bay.
A mighty warship and a peace to celebrate.
The ship was packed with hundreds of sailors, Marines, reporters, cameramen, and top military brass with legendary names, Nimitz, Halsey, Wainwright, McCain, representatives of 9 Allied nations and Supreme Allied Commander General Douglas MacArthur. Just before 9 that morning, the Japanese representatives approached the Missouri. They boarded in silence, took their places, and the brief ceremony began.
It is my earnest hope, and indeed the hope of all mankind, that from this solemn occasion, a better world shall emerge out of the blood and carnage of the past.
MacArthur was about to become the interim ruler of Japan, and the Japanese people, defeated and afraid, did not know what to expect until this moment.
I announce it my firm purpose to proceed in the discharge of my responsibilities with justice and tolerance.
Justice and tolerance. With those words, one Japanese delegate later said, the deck of the Missouri was transformed into an altar of peace. The Japanese foreign minister signed the instrument of surrender, followed by the Army Chief of Staff. General MacArthur signed. Eyewitnesses saw his hands tremble. The Allied nations signed as well, bearing witness to the end of the worst war in human history. World War II finally was over.
Let us pray that peace be now restored to the world, and that God will preserve it always. These proceedings are closed.
At that moment, as if on cue, the sun came out, and as the Japanese departed, a stunning aerial display. More than 2,000 Allied aircraft flew in formation over the Missouri. In Washington, President Harry Truman marked the moment.
The thoughts and hopes of all America, indeed of all the civilized world, are centered tonight on the battleship Missouri.
It was no accident that the surrender took place aboard the Missouri. The ship was named for Truman's home state. The previous year, then Senator Truman watched his daughter christen the Missouri as it was launched into New York Harbor. Just weeks after the surrender, the ship was back in New York, welcomed by thousands, including President Truman. He visited the spot where the war had ended. He sat at the surrender table to sign the guest book and described it as the happiest day of his life.
Well, there you go. And that was the end of the Great War. 75 years ago, So we've done something a little bit special, ladies and gentlemen, and just take you back, and I'd love to be in there on that day to see that, to fly over with over 2,000 aircraft in the air. Wow. But anyway, good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is the English Defence League radio show broadcasting live on blogtalkradio.com. And the title of this show this evening is the English Defence League radio show Tyranny Fails. Before I move on with the script, I've also got to thank Dave for all his absolutely fantastic work with the slides and the script. He's been doing fantastic as of late. And this is another great thing about Dave. He seems to be able to put a word to paper and does such a great job. Anyway, let me continue. Welcome to the English Defence League radio show with your host, Jeff Spider-Mitchell, and my wingman for this evening is Dave Agnew-Milner. Tonight we will be remembering the sacrifices of the warriors and the homebound patriots who brought the Second World War to a victorious conclusion with the surrender of the Japanese Empire. We will never forget the greatest generation. We will also be discussing various issues of interest to the current generations. Where truth thrives, tyranny dies. No surrender ever. And I like that last bit as well, Dave. All that is necessary for evil to prevail is that good men do nothing. And that was by the late, great Edmund Burke. Those who make peaceful revolution impossible will make violent revolution inevitable. Of course, that was by the late, great President John F. Kennedy. So without further ado, let me pass the reins over to my friend, my colleague, across the great pond, our great pond in the United States, the mid-afternoon in the United States, to my dear friend Dave. So with that, Dave, UK calling, UK calling, CQ, CQ, Dave.
Hey, this is the United States responding, UK, you're coming in 555. Welcome, guys. Good evening to everybody in the UK, and good afternoon to everybody in the States. Hello to everyone around the world, and of course, Offer. Yes, we have a big, big show. We've got a lot here, and frankly, we've got more than we're going to be able to do. We're going to do as much for you as we possibly can. As you guys heard in the opening, this is rather a special one, we're remembering the 75th anniversary of the surrender of Japan, which drew World War II to a successful conclusion. And, of course, yesterday there were ceremonies around the world to commemorate this time, and one of them, of course, many of them were in the UK. And Jeff, if you would like, I will send you the article that I have, and you can read a bit of it, okay? Just to give people a little bit of a flavor of the ceremonies yesterday. It may not be necessary to read the whole thing, but hey, I think that people would definitely appreciate a bit of an idea. There was quite a bit of pageantry and definitely some respect paid to the veterans yesterday, and that respect is oh so important, definitely. So there, Jeff, you go. It's in your Skype right now. I will go ahead and read the headline. Okay, if you guys want to go and look for this, this is by Ryan Ferry for the Mail Online. Okay, and it was obviously done yesterday. The headline, The Queen Thanks Heroes Who fought so valiantly to bring World War II to an end on VJ Day's 75th anniversary, as Boris Johnson, Charles, and Camilla attend remembrance services at the National Memorial Arboretum. All right, and Jeff, if you have that story, I'll turn it over to you.
Yeah, I've got it, Dave. I'm just going down. I've just enlarged it so I can read it properly. Okay, the Queen has given thanks to those who fought so valiantly for today's cherished freedoms on the 75th anniversary of the end of the Second World War. In a special message on VJ Victory in Japan Day, the Queen and Duke of Edinburgh, who himself was aboard HMS Whelp in Tokyo Bay as the Japanese signed a surrender aboard USS Missouri on August 15, 1945, gave grateful thanks to all those who fought for the Allied nations. The Queen, who was not at the commemoration today, said in a statement, "Today we thank the 75th anniversary of VJ Day, which brought victory for the Allies and finally marked the end of the Second World War. Those of us who remember the conclusion of the Far East campaign, whether on active service overseas or waiting for news at home, will never forget the jubilant scenes and overwhelming sense of relief." Meanwhile, Prince Charles, Prince of Wales, and wife Camilla, Duchess of Cornwall, attended an event marking the occasion at the National Memorial Arbitrarium in Staffordshire. In a speech, he said today was a day to remember and give thanks for the extraordinary bravery, resourcefulness, and tenacity demonstrated by those who fought on the Asian Pacific Theatre of the Second World War. And I've just got to go down there.
And there's a lot of pictures, guys. That's why Jeff is scrolling down. Continue, Jeff.
Yeah, I'm just making my assertions there as usual. It's so many pictures, though. Well, I don't know where I'm coming to go with this. The Queen's statement continued, and there's absolutely fantastic pictures there that we're seeing. The Queen's statement continued, "Amongst the joy at the end of the conflict, we also remembered, as we do today, the terrible devastation that it brought and the cost borne by so many. Prince Philip and I join many around the world in sending our grateful thanks to the men and women from across the Commonwealth and allied nations who fought so valiantly to secure the freedoms we chose today. May the memory of their sacrifices and bravery remain with us always." Prime Minister Boris Johnson read the exhortation before the silence, which was followed by a battle in all five hours over the Arbitrarium. I'm not sure if I'm going to cut out in a minute, though.
Well, I can take over if you'd like me to, Jeff.
Yeah, no, I'm just, it's just like I'm getting little messages coming up, what I'm hearing in the background. Richard Day, 93, from Boreham Wood, North London, who was involved in the decisive battle of Kohima in North East India, which marked a turning point in the Far East Land Campaign, was among about 40 veterans at the ceremony of remembrance. Mr. Day of the Royal Welsh Fusiliers, I think I'm going to cut off. I don't know if this is the end of the show. It's going to be or something. I don't know, That's what she's giving me. I'm going to pass it back to you, guys. I might be cut off.
Okay, Jeff. All right. Well, you're still sounding good to me here, but let me try and finish this off here a little bit. Mr. Day of the Royal Welsh Fusiliers served in the forces which relieved Kohima and Imphal, and told of how he contracted malaria and dysentery at the same time while fighting a highly determined enemy. The Pacific Campaign was nasty, guys, for everybody who fought on it. It was nasty. And to continue the story, he said, "I think the worst part was crossing rivers at night. It was cold at night. Then all night in wet clothes and wet equipment, still having to move about. They, the Japanese, were very determined for their emperor. it was a glory for them to die for the emperor. They didn't appear to have any fear at all. The Prince of Wales has paid tribute to the indefatigable heroes of the Forgotten Army on the 75th anniversary of VJ Day. And I'll go ahead and end the story there, guys. You can go and get that at the Mail Online if you want to read it. And it does have some really great pictures to go along with it. Basically, we didn't want this day to go by without recognizing that this has occurred, this anniversary has occurred, all right? Because these people did so much. Now, Jeff, this is showing that the show is over. It's not ticking over right now. So I don't know whether I should.
I kept that message. You know when they count you down, Dave? That was happening to me. It was really off-putting. So that's why I put it, give it back to you, Dave, just in case it just cut me off or something or other. So that's what happened. And my apologies, ladies and gentlemen. But I was just hearing the lady in the background telling me I've got so much time left for that and the other. So, but as Dave said, I think we're okay, aren't we, mate?
Well, okay, as far as I know, I did set the show up for the usual 90 minutes. It's always a possibility that I could have messed it up, but I think we can continue this in archive mode, Jeff, if you want to do that.
It's showing 0050, I think it's 59 minutes left or something or other. So I don't know. I think that's about right, isn't it? About 59 minutes.
Okay. Let me see. About more or less about that. More or less. Okay.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I mean, you can see that mark better than I can. But we'll go ahead and continue, Jeff. Yeah, we wanted to go ahead and mark this occasion because it was celebrated in the UK, and we want to remember that generation. And it was the Warriors out there doing a very, very nasty job in a bad part of the world to be at war in. I mean, the jungle just ate you alive. Snakes, spiders, disease, like that soldier described. Okay, it would get cold at night, and then it would get so hot in the day that, you know, you could barely move, but you had to. And it played the devil with the equipment out there. Radios, rifles, you name it, any kind of technology, and the jungle just gets in it and just rots it out or rusts it up or something like that. It was a terrible place to have to fight in. And the Allied troops fought in that environment, and they can never be forgotten. And of course, we also have to remember the homebound patriots, the people in the UK and the United States, people at home who were participating in paper drives and can drives and things of that nature, and living on rations and things like that, and buying war bonds with money that they got to finance the war with. Obviously, they didn't go through what the Warriors did, but they did their bit. That was what the war was about. I know this was true in the UK, and it was true in the United States, too. Everybody was doing their bit and encouraged to do their bit, even if they couldn't get out there and do the fighting. And we owe that generation so much. And that's, I think, Jeff, and please answer this, I think that's a big reason why Jeff and myself and so many other patriots of today do the best that we can to try and preserve what that greatest generation preserved for us so long ago. What do you think, Jeff?
Well, I think so. They handed us the gates or the keys to the gates of freedom and liberty, and we basically are the landlords of freedom, and sadly, our governments, predecessing governments, don't seem to, they've forgot the sacrifice that people lay down their lives for this country and the United States and all other allied countries to do what they did for our country and as a nation. It was hard fought war. Of course, as what Dave said, that the thing that people got to realise is if you put yourself in a hostile situation, hell, if you think of hell, it's hot, really hot during the day, cold, insects, God knows things that can kill you, and it's all about survival. You've got to make sure your rifle and your machine gun is up to scratch, it's got to be cleaned. When you've got time, you've got to clean it, because that is your lifeline. If you get an attack, you've got to be ready to get up there and take the enemy on. And that saved most of their lives, if they didn't do such a fantastic job. And that is my big respect for what they had to endure, Dave. It's not easy. Going to war and fighting in hostile conditions, it's all about, in the end, survival and being the better one, to win the war. But it wasn't an ideal situation for our troops, was it, Dave? This was a hard-fought battles. We see many, many of them, didn't we, in times gone past. But fought in those conditions, it just goes to show you how versatile our military is to get out there and do that. And I'm so proud of them. I'm proud of them all, Dave. And every time we should celebrate, never forget the sacrifice, because so many people these days, they don't give us a monkey's what goes on. But I do, you do, that the millions of others of us do. But it was the greatest nation, Dave, of the time. And I'd like to pass it back to you, your comments, Dave. And just to let you know, we've got Sir Tunic sitting in the studio. He's joined us tonight, mate.
Right. Hello, Sir Tunic. Yeah, well, of course, the greatest generation. I mean, there's nothing else that can be said about it. There's much more that can be said about it, but this show isn't about that. But it is about acknowledging this at 75 years ago, and we will keep pace with them. Now, we're going to go ahead, guys. What we're going to do now is talk to you guys about a petition, okay, that has, we're encouraging people who live in the UK to sign. Okay, this has been around. This has been around now for 159 days, and it's called "Release the Home Office's Grooming Gang Review." End quote. Okay, it's currently sitting at 130,994 signatures. Okay, and I'm going to give you the URL for it. If you live in the UK, please consider signing this. It's https://petition.parliament.uk/petitions/300239. That's 300239. All right. And basically, it is a petition to get released in full a review of the Islamic child sex trafficking gangs, which was ordered by Sajid Javid when he was the head of the Home Office in the UK, and has now been blocked by the weasels that are part of the Home Office. Now, they just want to palm people off with a white paper, basically a summary, and not release the whole thing. The people want the whole thing released. And I'm going to turn over to Jeff for some brief comments about that before we move into other subjects. Yeah?
Yeah, we don't want a summary. We want the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. That's what we want. That's what we expect. So nothing less. And the full report is acknowledged by any of us. We will keep fighting against it until you give the full report. So it's down to you. We'll keep fighting you. You know it's going to keep going. It's going to be like a toothache. We're going to be there, and we're just going to keep pushing it. And it's taking up. People are still signing it. So, we're not going away. We're not going away. So you better get your act together, because we keep pushing you, pushing you, and pushing you. Don't forget, when elections come up, if people do not agree with what we're saying, we, the sovereign people, don't forget you work on our behalf, that there is a time, a place, and a ballot box, where we'll decide the fate of people like you, who is going against the people, the sovereign people of this country. Don't forget the ballot box rules. Back to you, Dave.
All right, Jeff. Thank you, man. Yeah, now, I want to move into talking about the I know everybody's sick of hearing about the Wuhan virus, but there's something that I want to get into here a little bit involving it. And this is something that is being held up by a lot of people, which is this mythical vaccine that they keep talking about. Okay. Oh, well, when there's a vaccine, it'll all be wonderful. There's been one vaccine that has been created that has wiped out a serious disease of certainly a serious disease which has been prevalent in the major populations of the earth, and that's smallpox. Everything else, a vaccine is usually hit and miss. It's usually a flu shot, 50% effectiveness, and that's about it. Now, a lot of people have been saying, why isn't there a vaccine for this Wuhan virus? Because we have all these people working on it, Big Pharma working on it, all those people. And the Russians have announced that they have a vaccine that they tested on less than 1,000 people, I think it is at this point. And there's a good reason why you want to be slow and steady with the release of a vaccine. Okay, and I'm going to read you. This is for younger people. Jeff remembers this, and I remember this. Okay, but I'm going to read you this story because it is something that younger people, you may not remember, but we certainly do. And it has to do with babies that were born, basically Cold War babies that were born between about 1957 and I'd say about 1964. Okay, I'm going to read you this bit here. Okay. This story is, I'm a part of it anyway, how a groundbreaking drug birthed a generation of thalidomide babies. That's right. This is about thalidomide. Now, this, if you want to go looking for it, is by Daniel Rennie, R-E-N-N-I-E, and this was updated October the 30th of 2019. Okay, and you can find this at allthatisinteresting.com. That's where you can find this. The subhead on this is born with severe deformations. Thalidomide babies were the result of one pharmaceutical company's cover-ups and dark past. Okay? And again, if you're a younger person, you won't remember this. But here we go. I'm going to read some of this story. And the purpose is so that you can understand why just rushing out a vaccine may not be that hot an idea. When Agnes Denelian gave birth to her son Kevin, she wasn't allowed to see him for 2 days. All the mums in the ward were getting their babies, and I wasn't, Denelian recalled in the BBC documentary Thalidomide, a wonder drug. That's something else you guys may look for. It might be on YouTube, who knows. And so I asked the sister why, and she said, oh, you'll see him tomorrow. Your baby is not too well. When the moment came to see baby Kevin, the sister took her to his cot in a wheelchair as if to steady her when she saw her son. But when they arrived at his cot, the sister just left Denelian there, and as she departed, said, oh, by the way, he's got short arms and legs. Denelian didn't really think much of the comment. So when I lifted him up and put the blanket around him, I got the shock of my life. I'm going to scroll this down, guys. Sorry to I'm not trying to make this suspenseful. It's just the way this story is written. Kevin Donnellan is one of over 10,000 thalidomide babies born worldwide. Like Kevin, many survivors, guys, have short, partially developed and twisted arms and legs that resemble flippers. Others have deformed faces, including malformed eyes and ears. As I'm sure Jeff will comment when I'm done, that's only the beginning. Now to continue. Many were born with no anus, no genitals, underdeveloped organs, and were so deformed that death was certain. An additional 123,000 thalidomide babies, according to conservative estimates, were miscarried or stillborn. It is believed that many were unregistered infants died as a result of state infanticide. Sounds kind of like today. Between 1957 and 1962, thalidomide was sold in 46 countries. That includes the United States and the UK, guys, under 65 different brand names, aggressively marketed by Kemi Grünthal, the German pharmaceutical company who developed it. The official story is that thalidomide was discovered by accident by the company's owner, Hermann Wirtz, in his quest to develop an anti-allergy drug, but while testing it on lab animals, he and his team found it had a sedative effect. They had discovered a new tranquilizer that could potentially replace barbiturates. While barbiturates cause overdoses in high quantities, there was no such effect with thalidomide, at least in lab animals. And I'm going to scroll down a little bit more. There are pictures in this article, guys, and you can see the effects that this drug had on these children. But this is not the full story of thalidomide's origins. According to Dr. Martin Johnson, the former director of the UK's Thalidomide Trust, Johnson has gathered anecdotal evidence connecting the development of thalidomide to the Nazis. Grünthal employed a number of former Nazi scientists after World War II. Some worked directly on the development of thalidomide. Okay, guys, and I'm going to stop reading the story there. The point that I'm trying to make to you is don't yell and scream for a really quick solution. Wuhan virus vaccine, because the last thing that anyone wants is another thalidomide. Jeff?
Well said, Dave. Yeah, we remember the plight of these poor little babies and the families, the mums and the dads, and you know, I can't remember why the drug was used at the time. I don't remember because I was very young. They sued the companies. A lot of families sued and got a lot of money. That doesn't take away what happened to their poor children. Some who didn't make it, some who had to live their life with extreme disorders, sort of two or three fingers and, you know, short arms. And we've all seen the kiddies, and that's all grown up people now. But it's heartbreaking, and to think that a drug was used. I cannot understand why this ever happened. Why didn't they make further studies before they brought it into the public arena? I can never understand it. It's unforgiving, Dave. You know, they've got this new wonder drug, like they're saying now. Be aware, ladies and gentlemen, of new vaccines and that, don't you think that there's going to be side effects that we don't know anything about at the moment? I'm sure we do, so be very, very wary, because we remember that time, and some of those kids who are grown-up people now have got to live a life with this disablement of what was done through these pharmaceutical companies. Back to you, Dave.
Absolutely, Jeff, and I, you know, I thank the Lord that that I was able to bring this to people, and I thank you for the opportunity to allow that to happen. It was a tranquilizer. It was given to pregnant women. This was done seemingly quite a bit in the 1960s. I suppose they thought that women were getting hysterical when they got pregnant, or some silly thing like that. It had to do with medical practices in the 1960s. They would give women tranquilizers. And sadly, while thalidomide does have some uses, the absolute last thing that you want to do is give that stuff to pregnant women, because the result can be horrifying. So it's just a word of warning for you guys. Nobody else is saying this. And I think people need to say this in regard to all of this hope about a quote-unquote vaccine. Jeff, before I continue with a Paul Watson audio we have, does the Tunic or anyone else in the chat have anything to say about this?
No, it's just rejoined. I don't know if there's an issue or anything, but we do apologise. That's Tunic. I hope you're enjoying the show anyway, sitting with us, and thank you, mate. Back to you, Dave.
Thank you, Jeff. Yeah, guys, we will find a way to get you an entire episode. If nothing else, we'll use a safety recording that I'm making here in the background. There'll be a few stomach growls and things of that nature in there if we use that one, but you'll get a show that will be uploaded to the page. All right, so that will happen regardless, okay? Now, we're going to go ahead and play a Paul Watson audio that he made on the 7th of this month. All right? And it is, if you want to go and look for it on BitChute or on YouTube, I've been providing the BitChute link on social media, because any time that I can do that and bypass YouTube, I like to do it. But this one here is going to be 8.25 minutes long, guys. So I'm going to roll this. Jeff, if you're ready.
Yeah, go for it, guys.
All right, brother. You guys are listening to the English Defense League radio show. And here's Paul Watson.
Karen meme was hijacked by Reddit normies to define middle-aged white women aggressively exercising their white privilege. But in the past couple of months, we've seen a new breed of Karen take center stage, emboldened by their zealous impulse to comply. Righteously indignant, emotionally unstable, irrationally aggressive and confrontational towards anyone they perceive to be breaking the rules, a new terror has been unleashed, a new blight on society. Brace yourself for the attack of the Corona Karens.
Says you may not come within 2 meters of me.
I'm walking past you.
I have a pair of crutches with me.
All right, walk past then.
Between there and there is not sufficient.
Walk past then, you fucking donut. Walk fast.
Between.
Walk fast.
You and me.
Eight measure social distancing, Karen.
Do you ever look at someone and wonder what is going on inside your head?
Mace in the face, Karen.
What are you doing? You cannot be serious. You just maced him. You just maced him. You just maced him.
Wrong.
You just maced him and their food because
that
you disagree.
Because a couple sat in a park eating a picnic weren't wearing masks. Coffee in the face, Karen.
Oh, hi. Bye.
You don't need to be wearing masks.
Hey, Matt. That was dumb.
Walmart wishing death upon your kids for not wearing a mask, Karen.
You're not supposed to wear them.
That's not true.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. Even the school requires children under the age of 10 not to wear them. Why would I never wear
it? Why?
It's being ridiculous.
You're
over the all
side.
You take care of yourself. Fine.
All
side. You're going to
kill me.
6 meter stick, Karen.
Hey, it's a terrible time, right time, baby.
It's Corona time.
lockdown enforcer, Karen.
Your ass is grass. Right. Do you understand?
Cops,
and if you...
I'm done with this shit.
So, tell me who be looking out for those cops.
All right, I will. I'll be looking at them.
Attacking a disabled person for not wearing a mask, Karen.
You've got to wear the mask, yes?
Not even properly wearing a mask while lecturing others for not wearing a mask, Karen.
Yes, film me, because you're a dickhead without a mask. You're a cunt putting people's lives at risk. Knobhead. No! Put a fucking mask on!
Yeah, Karens can be gender fluid. Grocery store coven of Karens. And let's not forget that there have been several instances where people not wearing masks have attacked others for asking them to wear one. People on both sides of the mask argument have been acting totally insane. But what's driving such hysterical behavior? Taking sensible precautions to prevent the spread of coronavirus is one thing. But violent public meltdowns is something entirely different. The results of a jaw-dropping poll that received barely any media attention provides us with a stunning insight. A survey by research firm Keck CNC asked Americans how many people they thought had died from coronavirus in the United States. Out of 1,000 people asked, the average answer for how many people had died from COVID-19 in America was 9% of the population. That's almost 30 million people. To emphasize, the average American thinks coronavirus, which has killed around 155,000 people in the US, has actually killed 30 million. That's 225 times higher than the real figure. That's incredible. Americans also overestimate the number of total coronavirus cases by a factor of 20. It's a similar case in the UK, where respondents said coronavirus had killed 7% of the population, which equates to 5 million people. It's actually killed less than 50,000. So Brits think that coronavirus is 100 times deadlier than it actually is. The survey also reveals that across all countries, people think that 5 to 12% of people have caught coronavirus. In reality, even at the height of the pandemic, in England, for example, only 0.27% of the community population had COVID-19. So to reiterate, the average American thinks that coronavirus has killed 30 million people in the US. That's more than 29,800,000 than it actually has. Gee, I wonder why people overestimate the severity of COVID to such an alarming degree. Can't quite put my finger on what it might be.
Coronavirus chaos, a dire new warning.
A wave of panic across the country.
Worst case scenario, second wave.
A second wave of coronavirus infections this winter likely will be worse.
Is this the dreaded second wave?
Second wave of the pandemic.
How bad could it get? This is along the lines of the Spanish flu.
The worst case scenario is the Spanish flu.
So it stands to reason that much of the freak out over masks is because the average person thinks coronavirus has killed around 200 times more people than it actually has. In tourist hotspots in the UK, residents are literally leaping out of the way into the road when they see a person walking in the opposite direction. Even as COVID deaths in the UK have slowed to a trickle, with total weekly death tolls below the five-year average, many people are still too scared to go outside. Many people are also too frightened to go to the hospital, a factor which experts have warned will cost hundreds of thousands of lives due to untreated cancer and other illnesses. Now, as you know on this platform, I'm not allowed to question the same health authorities who once told us that there was no human-to-human transmission of coronavirus. So I'm duty-bound to remind you that there's no debate whatsoever about the efficacy of masks. Experts and epidemiologists in countries like the Netherlands and Sweden totally haven't said that they're pointless and don't work. Eli Perenovich from the University of Iowa totally didn't say, quote, they probably won't protect you because people touch them all the time. The science is totally settled. Masks work, and anyone who says otherwise is a granny killer. But whatever you believe about the necessity of masks, no one can deny that they've become a political issue. Within the space of a few weeks, the same people who hyperventilated over anti-lockdown Trump supporters for violating social distancing were literally applauding Black Lives Matter protesters for doing the exact same thing in much larger numbers. Contact tracers in New York were then specifically ordered not to ask people if they had attended a BLM rally.
Crowding together, particularly when you're not wearing a mask, contributes to the spread of the virus.
Should we limit the protesting?
I'm not sure what you mean. How do we say limit the protesting?
Should government limit the protesting?
I...
Look, most people wear masks because they either believe they're genuinely at risk or because they have to go about their business. But then there's another type of mask wearer. The type who proudly wears one to let you know that they're a good person while they snarl and spit in your face for not wearing one. The type of person who believes that complying with arbitrary rules, no matter how disputed, is somehow an act of righteousness. The type of person who thinks virtue signaling is the same thing as being virtuous. The type of person who believes that wearing a mask is an act of moral courage, when it's actually a mundane display of obsequiousness. The type of person who enjoys inflicting their self-aggrandizing superiority complex on others at every available opportunity. The type of person who believes that conformity is a virtue, when it's an act of cowardice. Look, if you want to wear a mask, wear a mask. But don't think wearing a mask automatically makes you a good person. Don't think wearing a mask gives you the right to intimidate, threaten, and publicly shame other people. It doesn't, Karen.
It's absolutely crucial for you to help me fight the war on free speech by supporting me via Subscribestar, link in description. And also signing up for my free newsletter at summit.news/newsletter.
And welcome back to the English Defense League radio show with your host, Jeff Spider Mitchell. Jeff, what do you think of that audio, brother?
To let you know, I found what the situation was. Invalid date, it says. 15 minutes. That's why I was getting a countdown, Dave. It was only set for 15 minutes. So I don't know how this is going to pan out for later. Seems like 15 minutes was recorded, and that's all it's showing at the moment. It's still counting it down on the clock, but the clock is dark. So I'm not sure if we're broadcasting live now. It was set for 15 minutes. Just to let you know, Dave, that's why I was looking and I kept hearing 5 minutes. And I didn't quite get it. And it's only because I've been looking down to see what that issue was. I've come across it, 15 minutes. It should have been set for 19. It was set for 15 minutes, Dave.
Yeah, right, Jeff. Well, and as I said, there's always a possibility of mistakes being made by me. I'll own that. But
That's right.
I say, I'm making a safety recording right now, as I always do, and it will take some time to get it properly edited and everything, but there will be, hopefully, a show uploaded for you guys so that you can enjoy it, and that should come over on the page as soon as I can get it ready. That'll be later tonight, of course, but certainly by tomorrow, you guys will have a full show instead of just 15 minutes. That's my bad. Apologize for that. Sometimes people just make mistakes. But let me just address this audio that Paul Watson made. The thing I find interesting about this, and a lot of it isn't new, but the thing I find interesting about this is some of these people are now saying, oh, it's like the Spanish flu. Is it really? Oh, really? Because when the Spanish flu was in full force, no country was shut down. In fact, all of our nations were involved in the First World War during the time of the Spanish flu, or right after that. Our countries were still going. Some people were wearing masks, but there were sports events, there were gatherings, there were concerts, there were all sorts of things going on at the time. We were living our ordinary lives and nobody was doing anything as stupid as a reverse quarantine, which all of these lockdowns have been. As you guys heard Paul Watson not say, even though he was saying it, okay, masks don't work. Jeff and I actually, and Ken McClinton did as well on his own, came out with the fact that this Wuhan virus has been in the air for months and months, okay? For months before the lockdowns. That's why people like Prince Charles got the Wuhan virus early. That's why people like Tom Hanks got the Wuhan virus early, because it was in the air. That's another reason masks don't work. Guys, you know, if you want to wear one because it makes you feel safer, go right ahead. But there's, these studies have shown as well that there's no scientific efficacy to the wearing of masks, nor, okay, is there scientific efficacy for the lockdowns. In fact, the officials in the UK have now said that for every 3 people who die from the Wuhan, okay, 2 people are going to die from the lockdowns. Okay, that's pretty bad. Jeff, do you have anything else to add before I get into the next audio here and maybe check the chat there?
I'm going to have to take a break in a minute and call back. I'd like to say about the numbers, how extraordinary overplayed the numbers was. When you get down to the nitty-gritty, it was not even a quarter of what they were talking about. The figures just don't make sense. They really, really don't, and hopefully one day we'll find out. We do know it's a globalist thing. We know that there was a plan put in place. We're not stupid people. We understand it's come from China, but there was something's going on. We're uncovering every day. It's just to me, not conspiracy theorists or anything like that, but I do believe that this has been set up for this time, Dave. I really, that's the way I look at it now. That's just me. I know other people feel the same, but I'm speaking how I feel, that this has been set up intentionally, and I can't for the life of me think why you want to do that to a nation. Not only this nation, but loads of 134 nations shut down. Massive, massive, millions upon millions of people. Uh-oh.
Folks, due to some technical issues, we've had to do a truncated version of the show. But we will be back again Thursday with a full-length English Defense League radio show. And we're now going to play out the show with the jam. Take it away, boys.
So happy, I can see that some things happening here today. A show of strength with your boys' brigade. I'm so happy and you're so fine. You want more money, of course, I don't mind. So my nuclear text was for atomic crimes. And the public gets what the public wants. But I want nothing, society got some going. Pleasure and to hate me, I've been enough already on my plate. People might need some tension to relax me. I'm too busy dodging between the facts. You see, here's what you get. You've made your bed, you better lie in it. You choose your leaders and place your trust. As their lies will shut down and their promises bust. There's the killing machines with paper rockets and guns. And the public wants what the public gets. But I don't give up, the society wants. I'm going underground. My TV screen, my display shout, my display screen going underground.
pleasure, John. Once again, thank you very much for tuning in to the English Defence League radio show. I will be back again this Thursday, same time, same place. So, yeah, you take care, you stay safe, and, of course, no surrender ever. God bless you, guys. Good night.
Now, extras that help you navigate the new media world.
Conservative media done right. You're listening to the SHR Media Network.
From a public locker inside a dilapidated Long Island rail station comes a show designed to piss off liberals using truth, facts, and ridicule. The Lid Radio Show, featuring the conservative voice from the People's Republic of New York. The Lid himself, Jeff Dunitz. Tune in every Wednesday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific on the SHR Media Network. Go to shrmedia.com. At Lid Radio, we fight for the truth, justice, and a good kosher T-bone. If you don't listen, Hillary Clinton might sneak into your bedroom in her house coat late at night and blame you for her election loss. It's the Lid Radio Show with Jeff Dunitz.
Hey, are you guys listening? This is Shannon from Right Wave with Shannon and Mike in the AM on SHR Media. I know you've been wondering where we are and what's been going on. Well, folks, that's right, we're back. So please join us 7 to 9 a.m. Monday through Thursday on SHR Media on Spreaker, iHeartRadio, and Spotify, and Facebook Live at 11 a.m. on Right Wave with Shannon and Mike in the AM at Facebook. You don't want to miss a minute. We've got lots of guests, lots of segments, and lots of interesting things. And let's face it, there's nowhere for you to go, so you might as well tune in. Again, Right Way with Shannon and Mike in the AM. We're back live on the air on SHR Media. 7 to 9 a.m. Monday through Thursday, audio and Facebook Live, audio and video. Yes, we are going to do video. Facebook Live, Right Way with Shannon and Mike in the AM. Hope to see you soon.
Broadcasting behind enemy lines in occupied California, a mere 2 miles from the state capital, the Bloviating Zeppelin's Berserk Bobcat Saloon Radio Show can be heard every Tuesday and Thursday night at 8 p.m. Pacific and 11 p.m. Eastern, only on the SHR Media Network. Go to shrmedia.com to listen. You can also watch on the SHR Media Facebook page and the SHR Media YouTube channel. No goldfish were abused in the making of this ad.
Conservative media done right. You're listening to the SHR Media Network.
It is he that is me, bringing perspective from across the sea. Join me, Jack Alexander, 4 days a week for the Jack Alexander Experiment podcast, as I take a unique outsider's look at the news and issues affecting life and liberty here in the USA. I'll show you what the mainstream media refuses to. Politics, border security, defense, healthcare, travel. Nothing is off limits. Catch the Jack Alexander Experiment podcast each Monday to Thursday on Facebook, YouTube, and everywhere good podcasts can be found. Also, check out the website, www.jackalexanderexperiment.com.
Southern Sense is conservative talk with Annie, the radio chick you bellas as host, and C.S. Bennett, co-host. Informative, fun, irreverent, and politically incorrect. You never know where they'll go, but you'll love the journey. Annie is a top conservative host on Top Talk Radio and features some of the finest guests packed with important politicians and newsmakers. Listen every Friday, 3 to 6 p.m. Eastern, noon to 3 Pacific, on the SHR Media Network. Remember, Southern Sense is common sense.
After 6 years covering terror and corruption, The Unpleasant Blind Guy is making a change. I'm Dave Milner. Join me on Spreaker and YouTube through SHR Media and on the Western Free Radio Network as I team up with Jeff Mitchell, host of the English Defense League radio show on blogtalkradio.com. Check show pages for airtimes. It's The Unpleasant Blind Guy
on EDL Radio.
There's
no surrender, ever.
Because truth is not always pleasant.
Conservative media done right. You're listening to the SHR Media Network.
It's Your Business Diva here, Melanie Collette. I am inviting you to a front row seat as I discuss some of the most intriguing details of wealth and finance with today's movers and shakers in the world of business. Listen in and discover financial truths on a global, domestic, and household scale. Uncover topics that will impact your wallet today and in the future. Money Talk with Melanie airs Monday through Friday, 5 p.m. East, 2 p.m. West, right here on SHR Media and High Plains Pundit Talk Radio. You can't afford to miss it.
Conservative media done right. You're listening to the SHR Media Network.
The dream deferred is real. You've been waiting for the Exceptional Conservative Network, and now it's here. Go to theexceptionalconservativeshow.com. Tune in and get the best in urban conservative talk. Stop dreaming. It's real.
WBN is proud to present the hosts from Sunday Long Live Radio.
Hey lovelies, this is Rhea from Sunday Long Live Radio from the World Broadcasting Network. You'll catch me live every Sunday of the year, 5 a.m. Eastern Standard, 10 a.m. UK for a few hours. I cover a lot of the chat that goes on, as well as covering lesser known stories. Following me at midday is Joss the Boss, the People's Poet.
Hi everyone, this is Joss the Boss from the UK. Join me on Sunday Long Live Radio, live every Sunday of the year, 7 a.m. Eastern Standard or 12 p.m. GMT. I'll be covering news from the red pill side of life with a little bit of humour thrown in for good measure. See you there.
Following Joss is Based Amy, our resident activist.
Hi everyone, this is Based Amy from the UK. Join me on Sunday Long Live Radio, live every Sunday of the year, 8 a.m. Eastern Standard or 1 o'clock GMT. I'll be covering Q stories among other Patriot news you may want to know about. See you there.
Following Amy is Nan from Ireland.
Hi, this is Nan from Ireland. Join me on Sunday Long Live Radio every Sunday of the year, 9 a.m. Eastern Standard, 2 p.m. GMT. I'll be covering the news and joining some dots and looking at the bigger picture. Think how the West is changing, the influence of the UN, the NGOs, the WHO, etc. You know, that kind of thing. See you there.
Following Nan is Bullrock from Canada.
This is Marty, also known as Bullrock from Canada. Join me on Sunday Long Live Radio, live every Sunday of the year, 10 a.m. Eastern Standard or 3 p.m. Greenwich Mean Time. I will be taking a look at news from a more objective and concise point of view, so if you like detail, this is the place to be.
Also joining Bullrock is Ed the Bear from Canada.
Hi everyone, this is Ed the Bear from Canada. Join me on Sunday Long Live Radio, live every Sunday of the year. We're on the air, 10 a.m. Eastern Standard or 3 p.m. GMT, which also happens to be Zulu time for those of you that are pilots. I'll be taking a look at the current news with Marty with a slightly discerning point of view. So if you like detail, this is the place to be.
There's your lineup for Sunday Long Live Radio, airing on the World Broadcasting Network every Sunday of the year, 5 a.m. Eastern Standard, 10 a.m. UK, 7 p.m. New South Wales. Just type in your browser WBN324 to tune in. We'll see you there.